Hey, entrepreneurs and website owners. If you're ready to take your online presence to the next level, you need a reliable web host. And that's where HostGator comes in. HostGator is your one-stop solution for easy, affordable, and powerful web hosting. Whether you're launching a blog, an online store, or anything in between, HostGator's got you covered. Don't miss out on creating the website you've always wanted. Visit MilwaukeeMafia.com/HostGator. Today, and let your online journey begin.
You're listening to Milwaukee Mafia, your podcast dose of Wisconsin Mafia and true crime history.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Milwaukee Mafia podcast. I'm Eric.
I'm Gavin.
And we're back again. Gavin, what are we talking about? I believe it is our 1965 episode debut, or did you find another 64 to squeeze in?
No, there? You're correct. We're moving to 1965. Yeah, so I've just started kind of looking over 1965, seeing what we got. We got a couple good ones lined up. We'll see what comes of it. The problem is like I'm adding notes in order, so I'm still adding 1965 notes.
So you have no idea how long 1965 right. is at this point?
Right. I know a couple things that we're going to cover. There might be something that gets added in the next week or two. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But yeah, we're into 65 now. So this is a super short episode. This might be our shortest episode ever. We'll see how this goes.
You know, I find that every time you say that it's a really short episode, yeah, it never turns out to be a short
episode. This one's
episode.
A super short one. Super short one. This is just called Who Was Jack Ionello? It's one page. It is short notes.
And you know, I think I saw that name on top. Would you quote that as a name that you're probably more than likely screwing up the pronunciation?
Ionello? I feel pretty good about that.
One, do you?
Okay. Yeah.
Nobody's ever complained about your pronunciation of it?
Or... No, maybe okay. Somebody will now. Yeah. But that one, I think that's probably pretty close. I don't know. So Jack Ionello dies. And
the first line of the story is that he dies.
Yeah. And his funeral was held January 3rd, 1965. So right at the beginning of 65.
So we're starting at his death.
Yep.
Weird.
Yep.
Okay.
At a funeral home in Racine. Visitors included Frank Balestrieri, Peter Balestrieri, Benny DeSalvo, Steve DeSalvo, Dominic Principe, Albert Albana, John Aiello, William Covelli, John Rizzo, August Maniaci, and others.
And so basically, from what I gather from that, it's everybody, right?
Many people.
Yeah.
An informant identified Ionello as a Racine member of the Milwaukee Mafia family, although he had not been active for a long time. He had been a bootlegger, but after Prohibition worked for a foundry. His wife had already died. One son worked for Chrysler in California, and the other two worked in Racine. An informant also said that Albert Albana and Benny DeSalvo were good friends from way back, and they hadn't seen each other in a long time, so they hugged each other at the funeral. This is a weird one. This is the first and last time that Ionello ever comes up in the FBI files.
Really?
Yeah.
Just on his at his funeral.
Just at his funeral.
Okay.
There's later on there's like a brief mention of like his daughter attending a wedding, but that's it. At no time when the FBI asked for member names, they would regularly ask the informants, like, who do you know is in the mob? His name was never mentioned. When they checked phone records from people, you know, to see who's Frank calling this month, never turns up on the phone records. There's no mention, to my knowledge, not that I could find, of Ionello in the newspaper, even during Prohibition. So if he was a bootlegger, he was apparently pretty good at it, because he didn't get caught. So he's basically a ghost. So who was he?
So, now I remember, I'm going way back here, when you talked about the structure of the mafia. And I don't remember what it was called, but like the boss would always have its like advisors.
Mm-hmm.
Is this guy one of them?
Maybe.
Could he be?
I don't know.
But even still.
I get the impression he's just a really low-level guy that just kind of faded away. But it's weird. It's very weird to me.
But if he was a low-level guy, and we're talking Prohibition, so this is way before Balestrieri's time and stuff right. like that. Why are they going to the funeral? Or is that what the mafia does, even though they may have no connection to this guy? They know he had a connection to the mafia at some point in time, so they all show up for his funeral?
Right.
Okay.
Which, again, that's weird. It's like they never, ever, ever talked to this guy. Most of them probably never met this guy. And then they hear that he dies. They're like, oh, now we got to go to the funeral. it's weird.
That is really weird. So like I said, is it common for them to maybe not have a relationship with the guy, but just because he had that connection to the mafia maybe in the past that they would all go to the wedding or the funeral?
That's not unusual. No, okay. Funerals are always big mom Bob hangouts, totally. That's normal. So who is this guy? Jack Iannello, born Giacomo Iannello. Giacomo, you call him Jack. Mm. He was born in Palermo, Sicily, March 29th, 1887. His parents were Nick and Mariana. Around 1921, he married Vita in Italy, who would have been about 17 at the time. Neither of them had close family or in-laws in the mafia that I'm aware of, nor were they related to any of the known Sicilian families in Milwaukee. So most Sicilian people in Milwaukee, whether they're mob people or not, they have cousins who are connected somehow. This is not that. They had at least two children in Sicily, Anna and Nick. And then around 1924, the family came to the United States. Later sources said that Jack was a veteran of World War I. For this to be true, he would either have had to come to the United States earlier and then return to Sicily after the war, which is possible, or he had been in World War I in the Italian military, which is, I suppose, also possible. I'm not sure which is the case. Once in Wisconsin, Jack and Vita had at least two more children, Joseph and Anthony. They settled in Racine, and Jack worked in a foundry. According to the informant mentioned at the beginning of this, Iannello was active during Prohibition and would likely have been made a mafia member at that time, the 1920s. I could find no mention in the newspaper of an arrest for bootlegging. Further, in my Milwaukee Mafia book, the one with the white cover, plug there, I have a chapter on Racine mob in there with some violence that happened during Prohibition. He's not in that chapter. He doesn't come up in the investigations of the violence going on at the time. So he surely would have known the guys in Racine who were bootlegging and shooting each other, but does not get mentioned. So I don't know. His wife Vita died in Racine November 20th, 1934. She's only 30 years old. Her obituary does not mention a cause of death. I didn't personally check her death record to see what she died of, but there's no indication it was anything other than natural, even though 30 is pretty young. Natural things happen. In 1937, Jack remarried to Louise Biscardi. She was a Wisconsin native. She was born in Wisconsin. Her parents were from the Murano region of Calabria, which is the primary place that the Italians in Kenosha were from. As opposed to the Milwaukee Italians who were Sicilian. She, too, had no obvious mob connections by blood or marriage. On December 20th, 1937, they had a son, Fortunato, who was known as James. As the informant said, Louise predeceased Jack on January 30th, 1959. She was only 50 years old. Again, apparently natural causes. All of Jack's children were respectable members of the community, as near as I can tell. And then Jack, of course, passes in 1965, back to the beginning of our story. So the question is, what's up with this guy? this is what I could put together as his bio. There's nothing in here. How did he get into the mob? What's the deal? Because not everybody who was a bootlegger was a mafia member.
Right.
Not even all any Italian, you know, was automatically a mafia member. So what was he doing that got him in? And then after Prohibition ended, they just never called him again. They're just like, oh, okay, we're good.
Okay, so I got to ask you a couple questions here. I think you probably revealed all this, but I just want to make sure I understand it all.
Yeah.
So the theory that he was a Prohibition guy just comes from the fact that he was the right age and to have been around during Prohibition, that that would have been like his peak time.
That is what the informant says to the FBI.
We do not know who the informant is, of course.
I have a suspicion who it is, but we do not know. And but it seems reliable to me because the informant was at the funeral. And so I'm assuming the informant is an old-time mafia guy who probably, like, when he was alerted to the funeral, was like, oh, yeah, I remember that guy from, like, 30 years ago.
Because I can't imagine that you get involved in Prohibition and there's no trail of you being there. Because you said you can't find any mention of him ever being arrested, even being
I mean, it happens, but it's kind of odd.
It's like even being suspected in anything?
Yeah, the only thing that I can think of that it's either he completely avoided arrest and newspaper coverage, which is possible, or they botched his name so bad that I couldn't find it because they spelt it really terrible.
And that's very possible.
And that happens too.
Yeah.
That happens too. There's a lot of times in the 1920s where the Italian names are really, really poorly spelled in the newspaper.
But if he had this, I mean, you would at least see, they would get Jack right?
Yeah, probably.
I mean, did you do a search?
I'm not going to search for everybody named Jack in the 1920s.
Jack in Prohibition? You know?
I tried. I really put in an effort. And, you know, so I'm not surprised if something snuck past me, but there's nothing obvious out there.
It just seems really, so, but is it very extremely normal that all of these people would have gone to that funeral? Or does this seem like over the top, considering the fact that he doesn't appear to have any sort of connection to direct members, right?
He doesn't that I'm aware of, no. And it's, I don't know that it's over the top. Like, typically, if a known mob guy dies, that funeral is going to be full. I mean, easily 20, 30 mob guys. Sometimes even mob guys from other cities will show up out of respect. That's not unusual. For a guy who is basically completely unknown, maybe having like 10 guys show up is a bit much, but not really. I mean, anybody who had been a member for a long time, if they were free that day, probably would have gone.
Okay. So it could just very well be that this guy was masterful at his Prohibition gig and just simply never really gotten any trouble for it.
Yeah, it's odd to me because I want to know like how he got in. Because I don't want to imply that he killed somebody. Like, I don't want to go out that far. But I don't know how to say it without saying it. I mean, you don't have to kill somebody to get into the mafia. But it helps. And like, so I'm wondering, you know, because, like, not everybody who was bootlegging got into the mafia. Like, there would be hundreds of guys then.
Mm-hmm.
So what did he do that everyone's like, we need this guy? And I don't know. And then the weird thing is he fades away. And so I got this little note on my thing here where I'm like, I'm curious, functionally, like, it's getting technical here. Functionally, what's the difference between this guy, who is a mafia member, whether anybody ever talks to him or not, and somebody who's always around but is not a mafia member. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking like this because you take like most of the bookies. Most of the bookies are not actual mob members in the strict sense that they went through a ceremony and all right. that. But I think they generally know what's going on. And they know that, you know, they're kicking in money to the mob. Now, some of them don't necessarily want to. Mm-hmm. But they're all kind of in that circle. So from an outsider's perspective, they're a much more important part of the mafia than this guy who's working at the foundry in Racine and hasn't done anything in decades, doesn't talk to anybody. But at the same time, because he is an official member, technically, if they called him up and they said, hey, we need you to do this, he's supposed to do it. So it's weird. Like, where does this put him? Because, yeah, when you do the whole ceremony thing, like, and, you know, depending on the individual, it'll vary how serious you take it, as with anything. But you'd go through the ceremony and you say, you know, I pledge myself to the mafia more than my family, more than God himself. You know, it's a super serious thing. At least it's supposed to be. And so if they called him up and they said, hey, we've got a real problem here in Racine and we need you to handle it, he's supposed to say yes. But there's no evidence that he did.
Yeah. So, and there's no evidence that anybody ever called him to do it either.
Yeah. So it's weird to me because this guy is technically higher ranking than dozens of guys who are far more important. Mm-hmm. I don't quite get this.
It's interesting.
Yeah. But
so there's a whole big hole here that we have no idea.
Right. And that's why, like I said, this is a super short episode because, like, I don't know. This is just a big question mark. But because it's interesting to me. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. Not that this episode is, like, sharing a lot of knowledge with people. Like, if that's the episodes you like, this isn't that. And I'm sorry. But this is the question mark episode being like, what is this? What is going on here? And I would gladly welcome people who are knowledgeable or even people who aren't knowledgeable, but they have, like, speculations. I would love to hear what you think the story is here with this guy because as far as I can recall, and somebody can probably correct me, but as far as I can recall, he's kind of unique in this way. We're not going to see other times where somebody dies and they're all of a sudden be like, oh yeah, he was a mob guy. Like, no, like that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. There might've been mob guys who were like more active early on and then they were kind of went into retirement. That's not unusual, but they were known.
Right.
They were known guys. This guy's just sitting there, just watching his TV being like, yep, I'm in the mob, but I don't do anything. Like, it's weird.
This doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me because based on what you said, it doesn't seem like this guy's wealthy by any means.
But, oh, no. Heck no.
But could he have snuck through by just contributing large amounts of money to the mafia or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like I said, the old myth is that you got to kill somebody to get into the mafia. And that's not true. Like, it's helpful. I mean, if you,
I love how you put that. It's helpful to kill somebody, yeah. But you don't have to.
Yeah. If the mafia says, hey, can you kill this guy? And you kill this guy, they're probably going to let you in. But really the bottom line is, are you earning money? And if you are bringing in decent, and maybe that's the thing. Maybe he was really, really good during Prohibition, didn't get caught, was bringing in thousands of dollars. And they said, well, we need you on board because you're a big money maker for us. Maybe that's all it was.
Yeah.
And then after Prohibition ended, he had no further purpose because all your skills with Prohibition are worthless now. Like, maybe that's all it is.
The mafia members don't really have a reason to come back to you and say, hey, we need you to do this now because what your purpose has, you know, kind of ended. And then at the same time, they also all adore him because he made them a crap load of money in his peak. So
yeah. So it could be just like, okay, well, you're not a gambler, so we don't need you for that. You're not necessarily a tough guy, so we don't need you for rough stuff. You were just really good at running booze. Mm-hmm. So it could be as simple as that. But again, like I said, I'd love to hear some thoughts on that from people because this one just I've known about this guy for many, many years, and I've never fully felt great about him because I'm like, what is the deal with this guy?
And
because he's one of a kind to me.
I'm not going to say that's not it, but it just seems like if you're moving booze at any sort of level, your name is going to be there somewhere. Maybe you never get caught, but they at least suspect you in it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, I mean, I don't doubt that, like, the Racine police knew who he was. That doesn't surprise me if that's the case. But it never came out.
Yeah, and, well, and you're not finding paperwork with his name on it.
Right.
That he was a suspect in this or that.
Right.
Which is really weird, because I think if he was doing booze in any sort of quantity, they would have eventually investigated him in some way.
Yeah.
Maybe never found anything, but at least investigated
it. Yeah. So, I don't know. Mystery man.
The mystery man. Maybe they just really like foundry workers.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. But also, I guess one last thing I'll throw in. Like this, we really can just wrap. There's not a whole lot here. But we can just, I'll say this. I also, in general, I'm curious what the story is with Racine. Because there are a couple guys who get known in the 20s and 30s, and again, who were covered in the Milwaukee Mafia book. And then later on, in the 60s, we get John Rizzo, who's a fairly big figure. But through most of Racine, like, at least through the 40s and 50s, that big 20-year gap in between, there really isn't a lot of mention. And that's odd to me as well, because Milwaukee's got its big thing going on. Kenosha's got its big thing going on. And I don't think that Racine just never did anything. I find that hard to believe. And I'm wondering if maybe this is just like a thing where they don't have good information on Racine, if that's part of the deal here.
Maybe
too.
Maybe like the Racine Police Department just kind of ignored the fact that it was going on through that period of time.
Yeah.
So they just never really investigated anything.
Maybe. But yeah, and granted, like as far as like the Italian community goes, Racine does not have the Italian community that Kenosha and Milwaukee is. It just doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that it had any mob stuff going on at all would lead me to believe there's got to be a guy or two hanging out there.
Mm-hmm.
Never hear about him.
No.
So it's kind of weird.
That is interesting. All right. I don't think I have any other questions for this one.
Yeah,
I
say it's just
to add.
No, just a quick one, and I'd love to hear from people. And
yeah, this is your opportunity. Gavin is willing to take speculations. I wish I had a speculation for this one, but I really don't because it just, I mean, there isn't a whole lot to go off of on this, you know, because he just doesn't show up anywhere, and that's just very suspicious.
Yeah, and unfortunately, this is we don't have video where I would show you a picture, because he does have a picture on his citizenship papers. He's got some sweet hair. Let me just say, his citizenship photo is, he's got a really nice haircut. He's got big hair, like not long hair, but big hair. And
I might have to take a look at this picture after this podcast. So
he's a cool looking guy.
So everybody, that's your homework assignment till the next episode, is to take a look, go dig that out and try to see if you can catch.
You just Google his name and it'll come up, because I've posted it online. And when I was searching to add this episode, my own post came up repeatedly. So it's easy to find. But anyway, yeah, so if you got speculation, or you know, I mean, you know, maybe there's people who know things. Maybe there's grandchildren out there who know more about who this guy was. You know, not necessarily criminal stuff, just anything. That'd be great, too. You can email MilwaukeeMafia@gmail.com, and I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, because we'd like to make this story at least a page and a half long instead of just a page, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is everything. I mean, I could have got like a line on page two, but this is really it.
Yeah. So, all right. Then with that, we'll wrap this episode up. As always, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/MilwaukeeMafia. And Gavin, where can those people reach out to you with those comments and whatever's
up? I did say MilwaukeeMafia@gmail.com. But
did you?
I'm sorry. That's okay. But you could also go to the MilwaukeeMafia.com website, which is full of good stuff, and this is where these notes will be. And you can sign up for the Patreon from there. And one last thing I can throw on here. You know, I don't think I've even mentioned this yet. I have a book out.
Oh, did it come out now?
It's out.
Oh, it's out.
It's out. I got a book out called Midwest Vice, and it's by the time you hear this, it'll have been out for a couple weeks or maybe even a month. So I'll look for that if you're interested in murder and prostitution in the Midwest.
And remind us, because we did do an episode about Midwest Vice on this podcast.
We did.
If you want to, can you just kind of remind everybody what it specifically was?
Well, it's murder and prostitution going up from Hurley, Wisconsin, down through Milwaukee, through Peoria, and over to Iowa. For the purposes of this podcast, the key event is the Izzy Pograb murder, which is 1960. So all of this kind of has some organized crime connections, but that's the one that anybody who knows, like, Milwaukee Mafia murders, that's the one that's going to be familiar to you. So if you want to see the whole Izzy Pograb story, you know, I got the police files and everything on it. So if you want to see that, it's in there. And it's not solved. I didn't solve it, sorry. But be more than you've probably ever read about it anywhere else.
Yeah, so jump. And just so everybody knows, if you want to take a look at that book, there is a link on the support page of MilwaukeeMafia.com. That takes takes you right to Gavin's Buy a Book.
Amazon
author page, so you can find the book right there.
Oh, okay, yeah. I was like, it's linked to the book already? Okay, yes, very good.
So,
which, by the way, I got to update my photo. That photo on there is janky, but...
All right, so with that, we'll wrap this episode up. We'll be back next week with Patreon, and thanks everybody for tuning in.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Milwaukee Mafia Podcast. Join us next time for another look back at Wisconsin Mafia and true crime history.